All right, good morning and welcome in to the NBA Strategy Show. We appreciate you hanging with us for the next hour. And yes, one game, but multiple paths, multiple angles to get to make you money. That's really what this is all about. So we don't ask much in return. You're here already. Make sure you hit the like button. That should be the first thing you do when you get into the chat here. Subscribe to the channel as well. Notification bell in case you're up bright and early and don't want to miss what we're talking about. No House Advantage. Jordan's in the house. Make sure you hit him up. But most importantly, for the next hour, Josh, at Josh Engelman, of course, on Twitter, riding here. I'm just here riding shotgun, brother. And it's our first show. We were talking already ahead of time. Yeah. We share geography. We share history. Yeah. We didn't even know. It's a pleasure, man.
I couldn't be happier to do this show. I thought we were getting it a week ago. Real life intervened for us, but we're back. We're here. Game three of the NBA Finals. And it's a biggie because if the Bucks don't win here, it's over. And I probably stopped doing NBA content starting Wednesday.
See, I love the honesty right from the jump because you look at this from a content creator as a host, you look at this selfishly and rightfully so, right? This is money. This is extra work for us. So yeah, it may be great storyline for Chris Paul and the Suns to sweep or gentlemen sweep, but I think both of us selfishly want seven here.
Yeah. The more basketball games that happen in this season, the less baseball shows that I am required to do. I'd rather talk about the NBA. I wish the season went all 12 months. I would never stop talking about it. By far, the sport that I want to talk about the most. But even it'll be back soon enough. It's almost October.
Yeah, you're right. Best ball's popping up and everything too. So maybe keep you company until October. But I'm with you, man. Yeah. Right around the corner. And anything to get away from the blow up that happened last night against Nigeria too. So it's not even like exhibition basketball can provide us an escape.
I wasn't paying too close attention to that. Somebody mentioned it in our premium Slack. And I was just like, what are you guys talking about? Because I was watching the UFC pay-per-view. And I popped over to Twitter and it was, you know, we were down two or three or whatever the amount was with 11 seconds to go against Nigeria in a game where we were 20-something point favorites. Not ideal. I mean, obviously a game that has no real meaning, but at the same time, don't lose that game. It's just... 3-point variance, man. It's a real thing.
It's crazy because you're right. It's an exhibition and people are like, who the hell cares? I did see the only tweet that I responded to as far as like emotionally was when I saw Woj say this would be one of the biggest upsets of all time. And I was thinking like, wow, okay, maybe it is worth just a little bit of a reaction too.
I mean, it is and it isn't. Like it is from a numbers basis from what we are as the United States in comparison to the Nigerian national team. Like, it's a logistical giant upset, but there aren't any stakes, and that, to me, matters. Right.
This isn't the first round of 92, Angola upsetting the dream team.
Exactly. Like, we're miles and miles away from that. It's embarrassing, but I don't think it doesn't matter at all moving forward. If we go on and just roll through the Olympics, no one's just like, oh, do you remember when they lost the scrimmage against Nigeria? No one says that.
No, you get muted fast on social media, I think, for bringing that up on a title run. All right, so let's look at this. You mentioned as far as where we are selfishly, and I think a lot of people, even if you're from a betting standpoint, maybe people have a futures ticket on Giannis as the finals MVP, and that would be, of course, the Bucks coming back and winning this thing. But there are only four teams in finals history that have come back from 0-2. And as we know, nobody's come down from 3-0. So you said it already, death knell here, if in fact Milwaukee loses. I'm not convinced that's enough tonight to lead Milwaukee to victory, just the fact that their backs are to the wall. Granted, we've seen Milwaukee play equal at times better with a healthier Giannis, Josh, but I'm just curious how you actually see this game playing out tonight. It's a 4-4.5-point line. Odd Shopper, of course, is where we're going for everything. So how do you just see this thing playing out overall from a game flow result standpoint before we even look at the slate?
So I'm torn a little bit, and that's not ideal for me right now. I woke up. I was starting to prep the breakfast menu. Myself and Ben Raz, our best bets for game three. And the first feeling that I got as I started looking at the game was I would like to bet on the Suns. which is not what I want to happen. I am cheering for the Bucks. I have Bucks series bets. I have Middleton to win MVP. Like, it is significantly better for me, both from doing more content and just what I want for the Bucks to win. But for some strange reason, I just felt like Phoenix was going to win this game, and I don't really like it, which is creating a situation where I'm trying to just avoid it and hope that I'm wrong. Because now I'm in my own head and I can't get a feel of, well, do I think it's going to be close? Do I think it's going to be a blowout? Like, do I just want to look at a money line? Should I take the points? And now I'm so spun around in my head that I have no comfortable feeling on the outcome.
I love it. I love it, man. That gives us time to talk and try to unpack the ball of knots now that's your brain looking at this game. And it's going to be from both, as we mentioned, the betting and DFS standpoint. I'll say this. I agree with you wholeheartedly and selfishly, not from content, but from a betting standpoint. I do hold a 4-2 ticket for Phoenix, so I wouldn't mind one or two Bucks wins. I still am with you, though. And look, I have Suns -1.5 in this series to win, so I'm pretty confident in that overall, but that's not a gigantic return. No. The point being is I could see one kind of flow, and I wanted to bounce it off you, kind of play out here where Milwaukee does just fire right now in the first quarter. They come out, they win convincingly this first quarter, and we see that Suns 4 maybe jump up to 8, 8.5. Something along those lines, maybe depending because they're on the road, maybe you can get it even higher. And all of a sudden, Suns +9 after one looks really appealing because we know how well they've played.
That's an outstanding shout out. Hat tip to Ben Raza here, who took Bucks -2 in the first quarter as one of his bets on the breakfast menu. So you and Ben are looking at that in a similar way, coming out of the gate pretty hot, back on your home floor, get a little bit of momentum going. So you are not the first person to pitch Bucks first quarter to me on a Sunday morning before 10:08 a.m.
Look at that, man. All right, let's just look at that as far as like lightning striking, and then I'll move on. I'll take my victory and move on. If I'm in the company of either or both of you two when it comes to looking at something tonight, then I'll take it and move on with it. As far as the strategy is concerned, and I noticed because I was filling in a bunch, just kind of dummy looking at crunching lineups last night from DraftKings, just using our projections here on Awesomo, awesomo.com. Of course, $29.95 a week for Awesomo Plus. It's easy. You get access to all of our tools. You don't need to wait one day a week for something to be free. You can just take advantage across the board, even with what we hope to be a couple of more NBA games. But it shifted a little bit as far as getting the Giannis as the captain versus a couple of other people. So just, we talked about your take on it, kind of looking at the game result and game flow from an overall standpoint, but looking at it from a DFS standpoint, Josh, where are you getting to maybe the most, or what is your just overall approach to it tonight?
This is what threw me to, wow, this is really balanced. And in a weird way, this doesn't have anything to do with each other. Like, how I feel about a game overall and how I feel about it from a DFS perspective are two different things, because right, if salaries are in a different way, you're just on an opposite side of the game. It's totally out of your control. Everything that I did in the data that I prepped for this morning is basically running in lockstep with our current ownership projections. Like, we have Giannis projected for 32% ownership in the captain. I had him at 31. We have Middleton and Drew Holiday at like 14%. That's exactly where I have those guys. Chris Paul is the only captain from the Suns in double digits in ownership. He's the only guy in double digits for me as well. I found it really, really difficult to find an edge at the captain spot. I really only had one guy overall in this game project as an outlier in comparison to his ownership. And it's a guy that might not even play today. Flat minimum $1,000 Torrey Craig is like the most interesting piece of this entire slate on DK, because you have Giannis and Middleton and Drew all as expensive guys from the Bucks. You have Chris Paul, Ayton, and Booker all as expensive guys from the Suns. Like, there's a decent chance you need to spend on four of those guys, one other random guy, and a full-on $1,000 punt who may or may not play. And you might be okay with getting a flat zero out of a $1,000 guy. That's what's scaring me the most. I think you need to pay down somewhere in order to unlock all of the pay-up options. Torrey Craig is the guy that gets the minutes, but if he doesn't play, is it Javon Carter? Is it Langston Galloway? Like, do they go to Frank Kaminsky? that the biggest question to me now is like, who's the ninth guy on the Suns, which is not at all the egg that I'm trying to crack here.
Well, it's wild, right? I mean, we went from Giannis and the major injury and the concerns of him playing to now the only real injury tonight being Torrey Craig. But as you mentioned, he's huge because of the value that you could get from him at 1K, and knowing that of all the guys that are 2K or below, he stands the best chance of a non-zero return.
Yeah. Like, if he's healthy for the game, then to me, there's no real doubt that he's not in the rotation. He's playing like somewhere in that neighborhood of 10 minutes if he's healthy. If he's out, though, I guess you can do the exact same thing with Abdel Nader. They're both the flat minimum 1,000. Frank Kaminsky is 1,600, which is interesting, but an extra $600. I don't think anybody's going to be all that confident whether it's Nader or Kaminsky that's getting on the floor. Or if they go to the Jay Crowder at the five lineup, do they go to a bigger guard type player, like I mentioned before, for Javon Carter or for Langston Galloway, two guys that just aren't playing? That's where I think it gets really tricky. I'm just kind of hoping that Torrey Craig just plays and I don't have to guess on who the final guy is from the Suns.
What about Jeff Teague? And I know you're paying a little more, right? 1800 on the other side of it. And I don't know if you're even thinking about this as well, as far as the blowout factor, or at least the up by 14 to 18 factor. I can't see Milwaukee just pounding Phoenix into dust. Maybe Phoenix can run away with it on the road, but does Jeff Teague present any other pivot to the question mark that you may have with Torrey Craig? And again, on top of him, maybe or maybe not playing, there is still the concern of, all right, this is not the number three or four option for this team. So they're not pressed to play him if he's still 75%. And I don't mean play him, Josh, as far as tonight, but I mean play him his regular minutes in the rotation if he's only 75%.
I'm down on Teague for today. We have his ownership at 25% on DK. I don't know where
that's
we have
him
on FanDuel. 10% on FanDuel, but FanDuel very different. I think that the minutes that Teague got in game two, and I want to make sure that I hit the number. Do I still have it up here? I do. Teague played 12.1 minutes in game two. To me, that's more than he's going to be playing. As the series goes on, like Drew Holiday played 39 and a half. I think he's more likely to play 41, 42, 43 as we're moving on, which means that the amount of minutes that Jeff Teague can be out there is just simply going to get limited by the fact that they consolidate the rotation a little bit more. And when push comes to shove, I don't think you want Jeff Teague having to play more minutes in winner, like die, basically games in game three of the NBA finals when you're down 2-0. So I think it's a lot more likely that Jeff Teague plays less than the amount of minutes that he played in game two, probably less than the minutes that he played in game one as well. So I am anti Jeff Teague. He is more of a fade to me than a play.
When we look at the flip side of it, because I think some of this is just waiting to see, and he was, last I saw, bumped up to probable. So I can't imagine that Craig doesn't play, right? It's just a matter of how much or how often he's out there. So before we kind of look at the other side of the slate and look at some of the big impact players, I'm just curious on the way out and the Torrey Craig conversation. I'm sure he'll make his way back at some point. But on the way out, at least in the beginning part of this, is there, let's just assume that we're live before lock right now. We're 45 minutes away from tip, and we don't have any more information than we do right now at 10:14 on the AM on the East Coast. Are you getting to Craig and Craig often?
I would have more Torrey Craig. I would be more over the field on Torrey Craig. If we're to assume that his 24% ownership is real, I would be more over the field on Torrey Craig on DraftKings than any other player on the slate, which is not something that sounds great when you first say it.
But you even said it to preface the show that you're all over the place mentally here, that you don't know where to go with this game. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that when you hear it said, it may not make sense initially.
Yeah, it really just comes down to what that unlocks for you. That additional amount of salary, to me, I think we're going to see it look like, and I can't remember if it was game one of this series or at the end of one of the Eastern Conference, Western Conference finals, where we had like back-to-back slates where we got a $1,000 guy in the optimal lineup, at least one of those cases where someone didn't even play. And I think that we're getting to that point because of the way that the salaries are set up on this slate. Now, the only thing that really slows down the Craig thing is that I think you might just need the $1,000 player. I think you might be able to get there with other $1,000 players, and I'm slightly overrating Craig, but I think he's massively underowned just because of how many potential fantasy points you can get out of the big six for this game.
That's 8 strong minutes on Torrey Craig, man. If that doesn't deserve people smashing the like button, Josh, I mean, we may just have to end early.
Let's see where I have him, actually. That's an interesting question. So I have Torrey Craig in the optimal a lot. On average, he's in the optimal lineup with an average score of 9.7 fantasy points, which means that you can get by with Torrey Craig in the optimal probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like 5 to 8 fantasy points. And that's why it's so interesting to me, because you free up so much additional salary to get to the big guys instead of like, do you really feel all that confident in $4,200 PJ Tucker? I mean, like I do, but I don't. Or $3,800 Pat Connaughton, who could just as easily play 24 minutes if something just happens to work out well for Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis is $5,200. So even if he gets additional minutes, he's going to have a tough time paying off that particular salary. You get to like Cam Johnson or Cam Payne. There isn't anybody in that, like, there's nobody in the twos or even like the low threes. You're either at Torrey Craig at 1,000 or you're all the way up to Pat Connaughton at 3,800. That's a $2,800 gap that changes the way who your fifth guy in your lineup can be in a pretty dramatic way.
All right. So let's look now at the flip side here. And again, I don't know if it's variance. I don't know if it's just trying to be somewhat different, especially in tournaments. And we'll get to the GPP and a little bit later there as far as cash games as well. But just kind of looking at it here tonight, knowing that Giannis, I'm sure if people think the Bucks are going to win this game, will be heavily rostered. We have him, as you mentioned, on ownership. And again, you should be taking full advantage of all the things we have from the boom bust probability, ownership projections, and beyond here, $29.95 a week for Awesomeo Plus. But Giannis, of course, by more than double, is the heaviest captain here. Now, what's interesting is when I use our own site projections to crunch about 196 lineups for tonight, it takes three lineups, pardon me, to get to Giannis as the captain. So on our own site, I have Paul and Holiday in rosters before him, lineups before him, pardon me, as caps. Now, Giannis is in there as utility, don't get me wrong, but that doesn't at least match up with what we have projected for the ownership. Is that kind of more on the norm that you see, or is that something to look at, maybe something that jumps out?
I'm going to pop my projections into Cruncher right now and see what I'm getting as my optimal, see what I'm getting or how frequently I'm getting Giannis at the top. So my optimal has Giannis at captain, but my second lineup has Paul at captain. Mm-hmm. My third lineup has Middleton at captain. I really do think that you can like ultra mix and match these guys. Like I have Giannis being the optimal captain 31% of the time, which, you know, this one's for everybody else. 69% of the time it's somebody else. And it's to me, a crapshoot of who that ends up being. So I don't think it's crazy to get away from Giannis. I think it's obvious that he's the best captain, but I don't think that he is the best captain more frequently than all of the other captains combined.
Is that the same as far as, and I don't know if you've crunched yet for anything on FanDuel, but is that the same with the MVP spot, knowing of course that it probably would take either foul trouble or a Suns victory. And even then, it may not really be a lock that Giannis is in the top scorer tonight. So I don't know. I can't trust Chris Middleton to do anything, let alone stay consistent. And again, for Drew Holiday, and we're never going to see Brooke Lopez break the slate again, right? Yeah. So just thinking about it from an MVP standpoint, even if the Bucks lose, I don't know if it's worth pivoting away from Giannis at the top.
Yeah, on FanDuel, it's a completely different story because you don't have to pay a premium on salary to get the best players. So we have Giannis projected for 57% ownership in the MVP spot. I actually think that's a little light. I got him at 63%. He is unquestioned. Like it's basically the opposite on FanDuel. On DK, I have Giannis at like 30% to be the captain. I have the inverse on FanDuel to be the MVP because he's so much likely to be the highest scorer. I've got him projected for 60 fantasy points. The next closest guy is Middleton at 43. It's so hard to make up 17 additional fantasy points along with the multiplier of being in the MVP spot. So it's a tough spot where you can't really overthink it too much on FanDuel because they don't make any changes for the price tag. If you're playing Giannis and you don't have him in MVP or star, you probably shouldn't have him in the lineup at all.
All right. So I am curious because for, again, the lineups from Awesomo's projections, and this is where I'm curious to see how far you may break away from this, where it's Connaughton, of all people, that's popping up the second most as far as a captain. And look, a lot of this is workability. It's salary. It's getting to the studs that you can more often than not. And I assume that's from cash lineups where people would feel safer dropping in as many safer names and maybe not taking a risk on Torrey Craig. But is that at least matching with what you have? And if not, a little surprising that people would sacrifice that spot more often than not just to roster everybody else at the top?
I don't think it's too crazy because it seems like he's the guy that has to get the additional minutes. He played 33 and a half minutes in game two, up from 28 and a half in game one. They really just don't have many options. When Bobby Portis is out on the floor, he gets picked at in pick and roll over and over again, and it's a problem. Same exact story for Bryn Forbes, and that's why those guys played 10 minutes combined in game two. They're out of bodies after that. So Connaughton is sort of winning by default. He's not as bad defensively as Portis or Forbes. Probably doesn't have the same sort of gravity as Forbes from a three-point shooter or just offensive talent in general as Portis, but he's not going to die immediately defensively. So Connaughton, to me, is the first guy up to get that 33, like to be one of those guys that gets 30 plus minutes. I don't think it's necessarily a lock. I think out of Connaughton, Portis, and Forbes, you kind of just go with the hot hand. Whoever is part of the better runs throughout those games, you probably see either Portis or Forbes pick up that second rotation in the second half. So I think it's more than live that Connaughton plays 26 minutes today, but wow. I also wouldn't be surprised if he played 36 as well. Like, so I think it's more likely that he plays like game two, but I think there's some downside because when push comes to shove, he's still just Pat Connaughton.
Yeah. And you're basically hoping that you get what, like 0.75 fantasy points per minute if you're lucky, right?
Let's see. I have him projected for 0.66 for today. Okay. So yeah, you're like even worse.
Yes. Yes. And yes, exactly. And I thought I would be, but based off your reaction, I thought I'd be way off. I thought it might be like 0.35.
I have him as a 0.71 guy, just like neutrally without any changes for the game. Like that's just what I value him as. It comes down a little bit in the playoffs because he's going to get a little bit fewer touches. So yeah, something in like the 0.65, 0.7 range, either way, not good. that's the moral of the story.
Not good at all. But but look, I wonder though, just to the back end of your point here, if 33, 34 minutes tonight from Connaughton is enough to justify getting the result of the points at that ratio where at 3,800, or again, even as a roster spot at 3,800, forget the captain here, but just Connaughton, if you're getting the ceiling of minutes, it doesn't, I would think, increase Connaughton's value, maybe exponentially on this slate.
So there are four guys on the Bucks that I have in the optimal lineup more frequently than 50%. And it is immediately in line with the current ownership projections, which are basically the same. Giannis, Middleton, Drew Holiday, obviously. I don't need to dig into that piece as well. Pat Connaughton is that fourth guy. He, to me, is the fourth best guy you can get from the Bucks. I think he's a coin flip to be in the optimal, and the ownership is running that out as well. 49.4% projected ownership on DraftKings, and I have him at 51. So for all intents and purposes, 50-50. So yeah, I agree with what we see.
Okay, great, great. And that's good too, because if you disagree, then we need to explore the depths of that disagreement and make sure that we're ending on the right side here, right? That you feel good about where we are before we move on to anything else. I can't leave anything lingering in the air for you, Josh.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I'm right there for Pat Connaughton. I'm right there with PJ Tucker. Lopez scares me a little bit. What everybody else is giving to Teague or to Bryn Forbes, I'm just throwing more of that towards Torrey Craig.
Two ways I think you can kind of maneuver outside of what we already laid out with Giannis as the captain and then Pat Connaughton again, especially popping up a lot at that roster spot. See more people popping in the chat, speaking of which, so make sure you hit that like button, you're subscribed. The notification bell is there so you don't have to show up 20 minutes late and ask, you know, did Josh already hit Torrey Craig? Yes, he hit him for 8 freaking minutes, all right? We may even have to come back to Torrey Craig. He's that big of a storyline. So I'm curious, if you had the option now of working Drew Holiday in as another option of captain, or going maybe the route of, yes, Milwaukee can still win this game, but somebody on the Suns is going to have to score points. So if it's Chris Paul, or maybe if it's Ayton, maybe if you're paying up for Devin Booker as well, although I would think it's probably going to be Paul first. Where do you go now as far as your third option at captain, knowing that you could take advantage most likely of the second biggest guy consistently, at least in Holiday, versus rostering a ton of bucks and maybe having the lone Sun as your captain?
Yeah, so Giannis clearly the top captain. I have Middleton and Holiday basically as a coin flip tied for the second and third spot. So they, I'm lining up all three bucks before I get to a Sun. Chris Paul then is that number four guy for me coming out of Phoenix. I've got him as a much better captain option than Devin Booker. The $800 salary difference is helping out quite a bit there. I've got Chris Paul as a better captain option than DeAndre Ayton as well. Nothing but like a marginal amount. It's all pretty similar to the current ownership. But if I'm going to a Sun as a captain today, it's Chris Paul.
Now, as far as just outside of the top spot here, and again, you have some questions for Josh, specifically FanDuel, DraftKings on the chat. I know it's early for a lot of you, but look, Josh has been up and cooking for what now? Three and a half. You have been up the most and the most productive on the show here. Dare I say, including the chat.
I've recorded three videos prior to this show already today. It's a productive Sunday. I've got to go watch Euro finals later after this. Once this is over, contenders videos will be out. Put a little food in my belly. And then I get to relax for the rest of today and for just about all of tomorrow, because there aren't sports tomorrow. Tomorrow is like the free day. I love it. It's my favorite day of the year.
Tomorrow is like the first day of a diet and you're thinking to yourself, all right, let me just load up on as much shit as I, cake, as much crap as I possibly can today. I mean, think about it. If you ever have the opportunity to bring a second or third TV into your living room or just use your tablet, your phone, like most normal people do in 2021 to everybody out there, I'm not speaking to you, of course. I think today is the day, like even have the John Deere on in the background, just ingest as much sport as possible, because you're right. Tomorrow, there's nothing.
Now we get Home Run Derby tomorrow, and that's it. And then Wednesday is the true no-go. There's nothing.
Yeah, that's brutal.
It's a true nothing day. I mean, Thursday is sort of the same way. There's one MLB game, and that's it. But we're in the dead zone. This is, generally speaking, normally this is a vacation week for me. I'm taking vacation in like 2 or 3 weeks. Normally, for the past couple of years, this was the week that I would be somewhere else. It was like, okay, we're missing like 2 or 3 days of sports. We're shorthanded here. We're not going to do as many shows. I'm going to get out of here.
So yeah, what changed?
I was right. We are an incredibly successful company that continues to employ more and more people. And I do a lot less. I just do the content. I don't have to produce anything now. It just became a little bit easier to get away at other times. It was hard for those first 2 years.
Nice. Nice. Okay. That's good. That's a sign of success, both individually and collectively here. See, I'm too new to take off because somebody else is just going to step in and take my time. So I have to work holidays, July 4th, whatever it may be. I get it. I'm paying dues.
Look, I'll work a Christmas show every year for the rest of my life. If it means I'm covering the NBA, that's fine by me. I don't mind working the holiday. I don't have any kids. My family lives in Pennsylvania. Like, it's not like we're doing anything for Easter ever. Yeah. I'm not hiding eggs in the yard for my wife. I don't mind being around for those days. These were the holidays, but yeah, it is a testament to the growth. That is the reason that we are the most subscribed daily fantasy sports channel on YouTube. Of anybody, the best, the top of the line. It's a little bit easier now. We got a full pack of people. We got Jordan behind the virtual glass. We got Tyler behind the virtual glass. Chris from time to time. If I need to, I can do it. I've retired from the production game, but I can do it if I need to. I still got the tools.
Well, yeah, that never leaves you. No, right? That's like riding a bike. That's like water skiing. That's a talent like that never leaves you, but it's not something that everybody does. It takes time. I came up as a radio producer before I started doing hosting stuff. And it's amazing how your appreciation for what they do never wanes. Yeah. And also, you're right. Like, hey, emergency, you never know. Could be produced by Josh Engelman today. You never know. You could be stepping in.
Oh, God. I don't.
No,
I
don't no, no, no. I don't want to bring back nightmares. I'm sorry.
I don't miss it at all. It was just, it was just what had to happen at the time. I liked it. It gave me a bunch of additional skills, but like, I didn't have a background in this. was a finance major. I worked a stupid desk job before I started doing this stuff. Like, I had no tie to media whatsoever. I had to learn that all on the fly over the course of 2 years.
And is that right?
Yeah,
wow.
I guess it worked. Yeah, I don't. I was
no,
I'm a
man, no
nerd.
Bullshit. I'm pretty impressed because it's not easy to just pick this up and be comfortable in front of a microphone, in front of a camera, and be conversational and not just be a robot or just connect with information. And if you told me that you only been doing this for 2 years, I would not believe it at first. So
Awesomo started like the beginning of 2018. That's when I signed on. So we're at 3 years now. But I bought my equipment like 4 months before that and just started doing it on my own. I was working a job that I truly hated. I went back to a different job that I hated like 1% less than the job that I was at until Alex and Tom and Eddie and everybody were like, hey, we're starting this website. I was like, I would love to participate in that. That's and then great, I just quit my job.
See, it's all about that. It's the motivation to either quit the job or the motivation to not have that job to quit. And that's what I was scared into, where it was just like, all right, I got to keep working. I got to keep finding more radio work, TV work, whatever it may be, have 15 jobs in the event that 12 gets snatched away. But it's to avoid having to go back to the office. It's avoid, you know, to having to have a real job. And now I've been doing this shit so long that I'm not qualified for anything else. Like I have no trade. I have no degree outside of Gettysburg, a liberal arts degree. I'm not qualified for anything else. So I'm thrilled that this place is up and running and booming right now.
The idea of going into an office again and having someone talk about how they made like tuna casserole the night before makes me want to throw myself off the top of the building.
What's the worst thing you could possibly heat in the microwave? You can only get one answer, okay? Because I know what it is, but what's the worst thing in an office setting that you could walk into the microwave, heat, and then ruin the day for everybody else in the office?
I mean, I'm going to be generic with the answer, but I think we're probably on the same page. Some sort of seafood?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Like
absolutely.
Fish, shrimp, anything like that is going to just stank
a piece
up
of
everything.
Salmon. Who in their mind is reheating that anyway, right? Isn't fish meant to be eat hot and then that's it outside of tuna?
I was 3 cubes away from our break room and it was, I don't know, call it like a 60-yard long hallway. So like it's on one side, I'm on that side. Everybody comes down there. People would microwave and heat up the worst things in the world. And then you would get it where it's like, oh, so-and-so heated up their shrimp scampi from the night before. And then so-and-so burnt the popcorn on top of it. So it's burnt popcorn fish smell, two things that don't ever go together. It was never good. Never good.
Popcorn is number two. If you had the Family Feud thing, number two would be popcorn because what happens is you're right. That popcorn gets into everything. I used to work mornings and I would make this oatmeal and it would always have this buttery popcorn taste because one bag of popcorn ruins that freaking microwave. See, you get it. You understand, man.
Oh, I do. The microwaves that we had were terrible too. People heating up things and then it exploding all over the microwave and leaving it. That was infuriating to me. I hated every one of the people that would do that. It was just never good. I mostly just didn't want to be in the office. The real problem wasn't that they were heating up salmon. It was that I had to be there to watch them do it in the first place.
It's amazing, man. See, that's enough. It's fear. That's what motivates us. It's fear of having to go back to that world. I'm telling you. More. That's why you're up at 5 a.m. every Sunday.
I couldn't do it, man. I really couldn't. That sort of grind, the 27 different rungs on a ladder and rung 13 thinks they're so much better than rung 12. Yeah. It's just like, yo, man, we're both in the middle of the ladder and nobody cares about the center of it.
See, not only have you spoken to people's hearts tonight about tonight with Tory Craig, but do you realize like the connection? Everybody out there has gone through that. Everybody out there has sat next to a coworker who has the microwave now piece of fish, who has had that conversation about the ladder rung. I mean, this is as human as we can get on this channel right now, trying to pull people away from that reality. Before we get back to it, just a reminder here, not only to continue to hit that like button, smash away, subscribe to the channel, the notification bell, but also to take advantage of our sponsor, No House Advantage. It's incredibly cool. It's easy. And you're beating the books. Love this. I had no idea about NHA, Josh, before I started with Awesomo. Still waiting for it to become live here in PA to use, but I use it all the time for player props to use to gauge on where to go for the book. Of course, Odd Shopper to get the best return on that. So kind of use them as the tool. They also have the optimal lineups as well, but it's player props, over 500 of them, baseball, football, soon to be golf, NBA, a couple of games left, we hope. Just use our promo code AWESOMO. Use our promo code AWESOMO for $20, and it's amazing as far as first match deposit. And yeah, I mean, I can go to the books here and look at our own projection and say, oh, Jrue Holiday, we have him projected at 6.27 assists. The line is at 8.5 or 9, yeah, depending on where it may be in PA legally here. Really? That big of a difference? Bam, smash the under, and I walk away a winner. It's so simple and it's so cool, and I'm kicking myself that I had no idea about this up until about 3.5, 4 months ago.
They're a great sponsor. They are the sponsor of the breakfast menu as well each day. I got my pick right now. I'll give it to you guys if you want it. Giannis over 0.5 three-pointers made. That is the line at No House Advantage. It's also the line at books, but it's minus 180 or something along those lines if you wanted to actually bet on it. So instead of getting it at minus 180, in theory, you're taking it at No House Advantage at even money. That's a giant gap in value. Lock that bad boy in.
And here's the thing. He's selfish enough to keep launching too. And nobody's going to tell him to stop.
Yeah, right? That's what Ben said on the video. He was like, this should be 0 for 0. He just shouldn't ever take those threes. I was like, yeah, that's fine. Should be is whatever. I don't care if he goes 1 for 100 today, as long as he hits one of them.
Double R on the super chat. And again, everything that you have from it, that's the best way to get our attention, as well as mentioning what the worst thing to microwave may be outside of a piece of fish or bag of popcorn. Josh from Double R, and we appreciate you on the super chat at first and foremost. Do you think Giannis can win with Middleton as his number two tonight? So basically, how much can you trust Chris Middleton doing anything?
I mean, I really do. I think the bigger problem has been the lack of offense from Jrue Holiday. Like Middleton's been up and down for sure, but I mean, Jrue Holiday is shooting 29% from three in the postseason. Like they traded away Eric Bledsoe to get back Eric Bledsoe. And that was not the intention at all. Like the difference here was supposed to be Drew's upgrade offensively. Nobody ever thought that Eric Bledsoe wasn't good defensively. That piece worked for the Bucks. He would fail in the postseason offensively. And now Drew's doing that same thing, 67% from the line, 29% from three. If he can't be the guy that they just traded the farm for, that to me is the problem. I think Middleton works really well in this scenario. The real issue to me is that Jrue isn't holding up his end of the bargain. So yeah, I do think if Jrue Holiday were playing slightly better, this series is probably 1-1.
Is it worth saving, even if it's a little bit, is it worth saving money by not rostering Giannis at the captain spot and putting Middleton? I mean, again, you're saving $3,300, the difference between Giannis at the captain spot versus Middleton. And even maybe taking a risk and putting, I guess from a sheer volume standpoint, and especially to your point real quick, Josh, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but as far as what you were saying, your disappointment with Holiday, realistically, even if there was an option to pivot away from Giannis at the MVP spot in FanDuel, it would only be Chris Middleton.
Yes.
As low of a percentage as that may be, but more so in DraftKings. Sorry, that was the real question, was, is it worth saving the $3,300 on DK and taking a shot at Middleton as the captain, knowing you're still going to roster Giannis?
Yeah, I think that it is. So my main lineup has Giannis at captain, my number one, but my number three has Middleton at captain. We're separated by less than a fantasy point. And here's the big difference. So we're flip-flopping Giannis and Middleton, captain or utility, depending on the lineup. Pat Connaughton is in both. Jrue Holiday is in both. Torrey Craig is in both. But the difference here, and I think this is a pretty interesting distinction, the Giannis at captain lineup gets DeAndre Ayton. The Chris Middleton at captain lineup gets Chris Paul. Chris Paul is just simply a better option than DeAndre Ayton. I like DeAndre Ayton a lot. I've got them separated by 7 fantasy points. It's only $800 additional dollars for Chris Paul. And I think that Chris Middleton is the second most likely captain. Is it less than Giannis? Yeah, for sure. But you're still keeping Giannis in that lineup. And you're creating such a huge savings, $2,200, the difference between Middleton and Giannis just at the flex spot. That savings alone is enough to really open up your lineup a little bit more. I have no issue whatsoever going to Chris Middleton. You could also do the exact same thing and move Drew Holiday to the captain spot. I have that same lineup once again, only now it's Drew at captain. You're still getting Middleton. You're still getting Giannis. It's still got Chris Paul there. You're only spending $49,200. So not only are you getting a lower owned captain, but you're leaving $800 on the table. All of this is contingent upon Torrey Craig being a functional human being, which we've gone over already. I think it's really, really easy today to mix and match those captains. I'm almost like, I'm more interested in it now just because of the way this series, just because there's six guys that are really awesome every single game that I think that you could reliably get to.
So I know I'm bouncing just a little bit here, and I'm just curious, when you talk about just bouncing around and not having maybe a definitive go-to gut captain, how does that factor in cash games tonight? Because you don't have somebody that maybe you're rolling in a couple cash games and you don't have one guy that you definitively gut love.
As far as I'm concerned, I'd be very surprised when I play cash tonight to end up with someone other than Giannis as my captain.
Okay. That's,
I don't think that I need to, just given the way that this first, my optimal lineup looks, I'm happy to get to Connaughton. You get Drew, Ayton, Middleton plus Giannis. So you're getting four of the big six. If I'm going to throw away a roster spot, I'm okay doing that at the flat minimum. It could also just work. That's certainly up in the air. But if I run 100 lineups, Giannis is the captain. No randomness, nothing. Just straight projections. Giannis is the captain in more than 40% of them. So if I'm playing cash tonight on DK, it's got to be Giannis. If I'm playing cash on FanDuel tonight, it's not even a question. You can't have the discussion. He has to be in the MVP spot.
Yeah, I know what's going to happen by reopening up the door on the chat with the Torrey Craig conversation. But there are two things that I'm going to point out real quick. First and foremost, Jacob Brown, we appreciate you. We love you for popping in, even though you're getting in 43 minutes late on the show. So hit that notification bell on top of already, I'm sure, being subscribed and hitting that like button. So you didn't miss that 8-minute juicy deep dive. This is the strategy show, and we went deep on Torrey Craig. Now, with that said, I'm seeing a lot of response on the question of did they cover Torrey Craig to doubt if he even plays, don't expect him to play much. Now, that's completely contrary to the conversation you and I had. So this is not to reopen a 10-minute conversation on Craig by any means. But if you can, maybe to people who are popping in a little later, reiterate that there is a lot of confidence in Craig, even if he's playing at an 80-85% clip tonight.
Yeah. I mean, when push comes to shove, it's just this simple. Torrey Craig is listed as probable on the injury report as of 8:30 last night. More often than not, I expect probable guys to play. I don't think that he's probable and they're taking him out of the rotation. That also wouldn't make a ton of sense to me. I mean, I guess like the downside to Craig not playing, which by the way, you can still have the optimal lineup with a flat minimum Torrey Craig not playing a single second. I guess if you don't like that, like maybe Cam Johnson plays some extra minutes. Maybe that's a direction you want to go, but he's probable. So I just assume he continues to do the exact same thing he's been doing in this series.
Yeah. And you mentioned Cam Johnson, and I just looking at some guys that are more in the mid range, and Brooke Lopez has come up down to, you know, on the other side of it, both Cams. When you look at just filling out rosters, guys that you anticipate getting to more, even popping up in possibly an optimal lineup, where is, if it, even Jay Crowder, you know, kind of taking advantage of maybe Torrey Craig not seeing as many minutes and his productivity going up a little bit, not the studs, not the punts, who are you kind of getting to the most in the middle?
That's the problem. I don't have it. I really don't.
Is there no middle for you?
Not real. I guess Connaughton is Connaughton the answer? Or are we talking like Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, Jay Crowder, Bridges? I really don't like that area. So we've got Jay Crowder projected for 45% ownership. I had him showing up in the optimal 29% of the time. Bridges at 30% ownership. I got him at 18. You need those guys to have like borderline ceiling games in order to make an optimal lineup. And so much of it is because they're so close, relatively speaking, in salary to Ayton and Paul and Drew Holiday and Middleton. Like if you're getting 41 fantasy points out of Drew Holiday at 8,800, it's really difficult to justify paying $1,600 less for Mikal Bridges and 16 fantasy points less. The real problem there is that they're too close to the expensive guys.
Right. And I think you mentioned one specifically, and this is clearly because of recency bias more so than anything. And I hate to throw shade at Malvern's own here, but how in the world can you justify, unless he has an even better game than he's had already, how can you justify paying $7,200 for Bridges?
I don't think that you can. I mean, like, obviously you can. If you're playing 150 lineups, you're ending up with Mikal Bridges. I have a hard time seeing him show up in a one lineup, two lineup build, especially if he's already projected for 31% ownership, where I find him like pretty significantly over-owned. Let's see what I have his most likely score as if he's in the optimal lineup. Like, it's going to be a pretty big number. All right, so average score for Mikal Bridges to be in an optimal 35 fantasy points. I mean, wow. That's a whole lot of, like, I got him projected for 25. He's got to go well north, like a standard deviation and a half maybe of his actual projection. And that's why it gets really hard. Someone like Middleton, I've projected for 45 fantasy points. When he's in the optimal lineup, he's averaging like 48, a 3 fantasy point bump over what he's normally going to get. Bridges isn't all that much, like, they're relatively close in salary, but you need 10 additional fantasy points over the median projection for him. That's why it starts to get squirrely. He's too far away from that number because the salary is just too high. I'd be more likely to get to someone like Jay Crowder, but either way, I think both of those guys are going over-owned.
Now, as far as dropping the salary a little bit, and look, Crowder at 6K, at least a little more maneuverable than the 7,200. That's egregious, 7,200 for Bridges. So 6K, I mean, you're right. The point still stands where Crowder's going to have to overplay that. And he is, as we have him projected on our ownership projections, again, $29.95 a week for Awesomeo Plus, so you can be involved in everything here, is what, at about 45, just over 45%. There are two guys, one on each squad, though, that are just north or kind of in that 4K range. PJ Tucker, we know, is going to get minutes, but you're just going to have to live with whatever return you get. And he is at about 23% owned, maybe just under 24% owned. And then you also mentioned Cam Johnson, who, depending on the night and kind of the game flow, can overplay that 4,600, maybe double it or be a ghost out there. So I don't know if either now present any real sliding in as the second or last guy on your roster tonight.
I prefer Tucker to Cam Johnson, just because the minutes seem set in stone. Like, PJ Tucker's playing north of 30 minutes, barring a 40-point blowout in either direction. Cam Johnson very clearly is the more variant player. If things are going well, if he's knocking down a lot of threes, they might just leave him out there. They can afford to do that. So the problem for me is that PJ Tucker is picking up basically the same amount of ownership as Cam Johnson. And I just simply think that PJ Tucker, is, from a median standpoint, is more likely to be in an optimal lineup than Cam Johnson. I will say this, though. I love PJ Tucker on FanDuel as a utility play. Only $7,500 there. Cam Johnson's $1,000 more expensive. We only have Tucker pulling 20% ownership on FanDuel. This is, again, another spot where I think you need to have... You have to have three of the big six in MVP, star, and pro. You're only leaving yourself two other spots at utility, and there aren't a ton of places to pay down. Like, you kind of got to just buy cheap minutes in PJ Tucker. So PJ Tucker is actually my preferred value option, unless we're calling Mikal Bridges at 9,500 value. At that point, then it's Mikal Bridges.
We're just over 10 minutes left. See, more people in now joining the show. There's no reason why we can't hit triple digit likes at the very least by 10:55, let alone the close of the show. I would imagine that. I mean, we've given the audience, we've given the people, we've been overweight to the Torrey Craig conversation, right? I think that's pretty fair. That's deserving of a round of applause by us. Is probably
unquestionably. Now we are sitting at, we were sitting at 69 likes. So yes. I wouldn't have cared all that much if we held true at the old 69, but if we're not going to do that, which we already didn't, we're up to 73, run that number up a little bit higher, triple digits. It's the only way to go. It's the only way to have a show.
Absolutely. Yes. And Quinn, I apologize if you're on my brain length or wave, then that's mushed from having a 3-week-old child. So I'm just surprised that I'm able to speak coherently at this point. Look, I just go back to Tucker real quick. NHA, No House Advantage, again, our sponsor, where we continue to go tell you to go to play player props, beat the books by staying at NHA. Tucker's at a half. Now, we have him projected at 0.9. It's not like we have him projected at 3 tonight, but it's very difficult for me to think that he's not going to have a couple of looks just plodding there on the baseline to knock a 3 down. And all I need, Josh, is one of them to fall.
Yeah, I have him projected for 1.1 made 3. Love so it. I will happily take an over on 0.5. He's certainly going to get them. You just like the dumbest thing in the world I'm going to say, but you know, you just need one to go in.
That's it. No, trust me. It was like that with Brook Lopez up until he had that gigantic game. It was like that with Lopez with like 1.5 threes where he was just plotting on the outside saying, all right, you know, just get me 2. And it was plus money. You mentioned Bobby Portis and he at 5,200, I imagine has become just realistically, not totally, but realistically unplayable at this point.
I think so. Yeah. We have him projected for 0.2% ownership. I don't really see how he has a path to minutes in this series unless there's an injury on the Phoenix side. Like if Chris Paul gets dinged up, Bobby Portis can work his way back out there because he's not going to be able to get picked out in a pick and roll as much. Otherwise, like Chris Paul is just going to own him on every single possession down the floor. I think he's going back to the realm of the Nets series where he doesn't really have a role on the floor. It's just too hard because he's a true, true, like ultra negative defensively.
Yeah, that's killing him by all means. And look, even at 5,200, it's not like you can make an argument that he's down to like Bryn Forbes money at 2,600 and maybe just maybe Giannis gets in foul trouble and you can see him just forced back on the floor. There's not even that argument.
No, like that's the real problem. If you want to go to Bobby Portis, like, how do you justify that over going to Forbes at half the salary? Like, they're both going to get picked on defensively and probably get yanked off the floor. At least save half of the salary and go to someone else. Like, to me, Portis is functionally unplayable, barring legitimate injuries even further on the Bucks.
I don't know if he's a punt normally. And again, I don't even know how to classify him with the salary next to him. But I'm curious because there's definitely a pathway in which if Phoenix is down, if this is a game 3 and Milwaukee comes back in resounding fashion, maybe we do see a little more campaign on the floor. At 4,800 though, I don't know if it's worth for you taking a risk, Josh, with that, knowing because it might take, like, it's not a 1-degree thing, right? One thing needs to happen first in order for campaign to have a pathway to success.
He played just under 10 minutes in game 2 because we got Chris Paul up to 41.5. Booker played 44. There's only so many minutes left over there that campaign can even be on the floor. So I think that his upside is relatively limited unless you see this game going one, obviously, unless you see an injury coming, which you can't really project that. Or two, it has to be like a pretty massive blowout where you're just trying to throw something against the wall to see what sticks. But if Chris Paul and Devin Booker are going to play 85.5 minutes of 96, there's only so many more minutes you could play with campaign out there. Otherwise, it becomes a little bit of a problem. You can't really play all three of those guys together. There's too much size for Milwaukee after that.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. It kind of came up in conversation, but just to reiterate before we hit a couple of props, and I am curious to get your thoughts on the futures of where we stand too, and hit an optimal before we all get out of here at 11 o'clock. And then, of course, we have Eric and Terry, MLB Strategy Show, coming your way at the top of this hour. But, you know, just looking at the difference with cash and, of course, with tournaments, clearly Giannis, of course, is going to be in there. You mentioned way as far as the amount of ownership that you have in optimal lineup. So clearly he's going to be locked in as both captain and MVP. Is there anyone else outside of maybe the obvious on the Bucks, maybe on the Suns, maybe look at it at the set. Who is the number one guy on the Suns that you get to the most on cash lineups tonight?
Torrey Craig.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Take that, chat, showing up 40 minutes late, asking about Torrey Craig. See, you missed the nugget of the day.
Yeah, it just, it unlocks me having four of the main guys in the lineup, plus probably Pat Connaughton. But yeah, to me, Torrey, from a cash perspective, that just opens me up to better overall plays.
So real quick, and just kind of a follow-up to that, do you see yourself at all in a scenario where a cash lineup could be Giannis at the captain, everybody else but Craig a buck? Not only
I'm sure it exists. Let me see.
Okay. I just didn't know how smart of a strategy you would think that would be, because it's basically banking on the game flow that Milwaukee's going to have their way tonight, or have a lead and maybe blow it but still win the game, as far as get handled or just lose.
I actually don't. So I ran like 100 lineups quickly just to see how that would look, but I don't think I have a 5-1 with just Craig.
Okay. Just curious. That would be game changingly interesting if you did.
Yeah. It doesn't appear that I have any 5-1 Bucks lineups. It's the best that I'm getting to in any of my optimals are 4-2 Bucks lineups with Giannis at captain.
All right. 3 minutes left. We're still five short. And that was our floor goal. Like, that was our basement goal, was to get to 100. So I'm sure that with the help of everybody out there, and the easiest way to thank Josh for spending some time of the 90 things he has to do this morning before noon, more things done before noon than most of y'all out there already. All right. So that's all we ask. Get to 100 baseline there. Now, Jay Crowder, let's go back to this, because Odd Shopper has this as a ridiculously high chance of coming back as a return, over 10.5 points. Does seem a little low, especially if you factor in, as you mentioned at the start, Crowder getting some more maybe expected minutes as a result of Craig's minutes going down a little bit. 10.5 does seem kind of low for Crowder. Any interest in going over with me?
I have him at 10.7 points. So in theory, I do like the over, but not enough to cover the juice. So that would just be a stay away for me. I think that's a good line.
You know what, though? I'm glad you give me your prediction, because now I'm staying away as well. I liked it, but to have some more data to reinforce it. Chris Paul, over 4.5 rebounds, expected to be out there a lot, right? This is all about minutes, however many minutes. If you can get 38 to 40 minutes, 42 minutes, that should, you may sweat it, but that shouldn't be too difficult. I don't know what you have him predicted.
4.7 rebounds. So again, not that enough. Would be one. I like it, but it's a stay away.
Yeah. Okay. Middleton, under 9.5 rebounds. Again, we know he's going to be out there. He does get boards at times, but 10 boards is still tough to get to in any playoff game.
That's a prop for Middleton?
Under 9.5. Uh-oh. What do you have?
Wait, are you looking at the right guy? Are you on the assists or something?
Oh, no, wait. You know what? Maybe I'm looking at, and maybe I copied over on the wrong.
The Middleton rebound line is 7.5.
Okay.
I have him at 6.5. So I would take that under, but under 7.5 is -150 right now.
That's what it is.
When I was looking at it, I was like, oh, yeah, I will smash the under on 9.5.
No, I what I did is I pasted Drew Holiday's under 8.5 assists, but I forgot to delete the Chris Middleton. So baby mush mine struck me. I apologize. And I read it right like Ron Burgundy. Jeez. Yeah. All right. Last one, Holiday under 8.5 assists. You can get 7.5 for a positive return on Odd Shopper, but I do have it at 8.5. How does that match with your projection?
So I have him at 7.7 assists. Ooh. So I'm obviously in that sort of wiggle room. Probably wouldn't want to take the over. Given the juice on both sides, I think it's probably just to stay away.
Fair enough. Okay. Look, man, I try to get three out there, but the beauty of this is that you don't have to place a bet on, as you and Ben know all too well, you don't have to bet everything. The smart bet is usually not betting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everything has value. the key is to finding as many things as you can that have value.
All right, my friend, this was a blast. When are you back on the channel next?
We'll have breakfast menus throughout the week. I've got strategy shows and stuff coming up for MLB, for Home Run Derby, All-Star Game, the one game slate on Thursday. But Wednesday, you get me the entire day. Strategy show, live before lock, etc. Game four of the finals.
Awesome, brother. Pleasure, man. I can't wait to do it again. And
you and me both.
Make sure you follow Josh at Josh Engelman, myself at Shander Show. Make sure you thank Jordan in the chat right now as you leave us with a like if you haven't already for producing a fantastic show. MLB Strategy Show with Eric and Terry coming your way next. Have a great day, and we'll be back later tonight for Live Before Live.